Just a little review from last week. We were talking about the four faces of a man. You guys remember? Last week we were on lesson two. This week we're on session three. We're talking about the king face. The king face is characterized by righteous leadership, courageous moral choices, a servant spirit. Remember, these faces are four faces of a king, or four manhood faces in balance. We talked about the, what other faces? The face of a warrior. You guys remember that one? Protecting, providing, persevering. And we talked about the face of a lover and the face of a friend. Face of a lover, looking at tenderness, gentleness. The face of a friend, loyalty, commitment, connection. And none of us can actually do these four faces perfectly. Impossible. But we have the four faces to think of. The four faces in a balance, and as men, authentic manhood, to be more balanced guys, face of a king, face of a warrior, the lover, and a friend. Turn in your books to page 92. I want to just talk a little bit about the manhood plan. And there's a couple of these photocopies back on the table if you want to pick one up. 92, I think it is. Your manhood plan. And if you look at the manhood plan, there's three different spots. There's a look back, a look at now, and a look ahead. And I'd like you to just write a couple dates on the three different spots. First few months here till about beginning of December, we're going to be looking back. And so by the beginning of December, you want to have the first part of your manhood plan completed, if you want to keep up here. Look at now. Between January and March, we're going to be looking at now. So you want to have March on there. And then wrapping up in April, we'll be looking ahead. I don't think this stuff is that complicated, but it's going to stretch you, and it's going to challenge you. Take some time to think through that stuff. One of the reasons we do this manhood plan is that, as guys, we need to live now, today, with the end in mind. And through the next few weeks, few months, we're going to be thinking deeply about where have you been as a man? Where have you been? And this morning, I'm going to just start by telling a little bit of my own story, kind of as a kickoff. And then January to March, where are you now? And then April, where do you want to be? As guys, if we fail to have a plan, we're planning to fail. An unhealthy manhood just kind of reacts to life. In this manhood plan, one thing that last year in Womelsdorf, these guys were handing in their manhood plan, and I had a chance to read some of them. And it's amazing. Every man read the questions different. Every man had a different experience. So when you do your manhood plan, it's personalized for you, and it's about you. And so take some time and do it. One of the things I want to do this morning is we're going to take a look back. And I want to, each of us has a story. Each of us has a life story where we've been. A lot of different ages in here. All of us have a life story where we've been. And I want to model a little bit this morning a way of telling our story. And I'm hoping that in your small group during the next few months, you'll be able to unpack some of your story, your life story. And a lot of us guys, we don't know our stories. We don't tell our stories. Mostly because, or if we do tell them, we just tell the good parts. And this morning, I'm going to tell my story, but it's not just going to be the good parts. And not many of us take, you know, stop and take the time to analyze, you know, what shaped us? How have we come to where we are? And if you don't understand where you've been, it's not going to make sense sometimes, knee-jerk reactions that you make, decisions that you make in your life. And if you want to look at an example, New Testament. The New Testament writers, they spent a lot of time trying to connect Jesus to their history. And as the disciples were kind of, their lights were coming on, part of what turned their lights on is when they started connecting their history, Jesus, into their history. And it made sense. Their past made sense. Or Jesus made sense to their past. And it changed their perspective. And hopefully, as we go through this stuff, you guys will begin to understand what has shaped you, and you can talk about it in your group. All of us guys have a story. And part of this, I think this lesson was kind of tough for me, because I kind of have to stand up here and bare my soul. And part of what the process that we're going to do this morning is, I'm going to put some pictures up front, and going to talk about some of my family, some of the places that I've been in my life. So we're looking back. Where'd that one come from? I'm going to give you a couple snapshots. And if you want to look in your book, we're starting on page 15. I'm going to be following kind of the up close and personal. Everyone has a story. My story. And then there's a number of good moments, noble moments, missed moments. I'm going to be talking about some of those. I grew up in northwestern Ontario, in an area known as the Canadian Shield. It was kind of like, it was on a Bible camp similar to Camp Andrews, where Phil and some of these guys come from. And 70 acres on the shore of a lake. And it's an area known as the Canadian Shield. And the reason it's called that is basically all you have is rocks and lakes and trees and rivers and a Canadian bird, otherwise known as the mosquito. Lots of mosquitoes. Here's a picture of my family. I am about 9 or 10 there, I think. Hopefully you can pick me out there on the right next to my mom. And I attended the local public school for the first 5 years. And then the mission where my parents were with, they joined, or we started our own private school. And it was in this setting that I learned to play hockey. I learned to skate. Learned to paddle canoe. Hunt a moose. Learned to take apart a snow machine. I like mechanical stuff. And I also learned to cry myself to sleep at night sometimes, missing my dad, because he was into his ministry. My dad was a pilot. In the winter, they would put the planes on floats. Summer they put the plane on floats, the winter they put it on skis. And I learned to recognize the sound of the Cessna 206 as it was coming or going, and I could tell that it was my dad even without seeing it. And my parents, as much as they could, involved us in their ministry. I did stuff like being a camp counselor. My dad ran the Bible camp for a number of years. So when I was old enough, I actually attended the camp with the kids. And then when I got older, I helped as a counselor and did all kinds of stuff. Like we did a weekly jail service, helped with that some. Did kids clubs. And the mission where we were, my parents were in, was probably, 10 families maybe. We were really tight-knit, close group. So all the other kids of people that were in the missions there, we kind of got to know each other like cousins. And we were far away from our own families, so we did a lot of stuff together. And their parents often were like uncles and aunts. And my dad worked closely with Claire. And I remember Claire, he'd only let the Esch boys borrow his guns. And no one else could. So he'd give us his guns to clean, and we could borrow them and use them. So he was like an uncle to us. And in mission work, we didn't have lots, but we always had enough. I'd like to just take some time and go back a little bit further and kind of look at what some of the things that have shaped my parents. My dad grew up in the Old Order Amish community between Intercourse and New Holland somewhere. And on the top right, or top left actually, would be his parents. I remember because we were 1,500 miles away, when we'd come around to visit, we'd often spend a couple weeks, and we'd stay at Dottie Esch's. And remember having lots of fun at their place. My grandma Esch almost died when my dad was born. And it seemed like there was something special, or my dad had a special place in my grandma's heart. She spent a lot of time praying for him. My daughter Esch worked hard a lot of his life, tried farming and different business things. Never really was that successful. He wasn't a very great manager, but he provided for his family. And probably in his later years, he was better off than earlier. Sometime after my dad would have left home, then my grandparents joined the New Order Church. I always felt a lot of warmth and safety being in their home. I had a lot of fun. They lived right beside my uncle and aunt, and just outside of Intercourse on 340. So we'd have lots of good times. Some really significant things that shaped my dad's life that also impacted mine. My dad, when he was about 12, through the influence of a school teacher that he had, he understood what it meant to be a believer and be a Christian. And he had made a commitment at that time. Another thing that happened, and left a huge mark on my dad's life. I'm thinking it started maybe 9 or 10 years old. My dad was sexually abused regularly over a number of years by a family member. Left a deep impression on his life and a deep impression on mine later. My dad did the normal sowing his wild oats at from about 15 to 18. And and that's when he decided he's going to commit himself to the Lord. At about age 18. Picture on the bottom left is my grandparents, would be my mom's parents, at least the grandparents that I would have known. My Pop Miller, he died a couple years ago and spent all his life working. Died at about 86 years old, and he still had a trailer and a van that he would do hauling, and he did that up to the last year he was living. I remember whenever we'd come to visit, we'd spend a week or two at their place, and me and my brothers would go with him in his delivery truck, and he delivered oil. And remember, in his 70s, he would, as he would be making his rounds, he got tired of the rolling the 55-gallon drums to the back and putting it on the lift and up and down. It was too slow for him. So what he'd do, he'd lay it over on the side, roll it to the edge of his flatbed, put a couple of car tires on the ground, drop it off on the tires. When it was bouncing, he'd flip it up on the end and roll it to where he wanted it to be. And that's the way he was. He's simple, unassuming, just kind of quiet guy. But he was very solid in his faith. My mom, a couple things shaping my mom's life. When my mom was about, she was the oldest of five kids. And when she was, it's my parents there on the right. When my mom was about 12, her mom was in the 50s. She came down with cancer, and not a lot of options back then. She lived maybe a year or two and ended up dying, leaving my mom, who was about 14 by then, three sisters and a brother, alone, without a mom. My grandpa, one of the things my mom ended up filling in for her mom, so she was doing the housework, keeping after her siblings. And then less than a year after her mom died, and you know how back in those days you didn't talk about stuff either, so no one was talking to her about the kind of turmoil that was going on inside losing your mother. And then less than a year after her mom died, my grandpa remarried a widow with four children, and they were all older than my mom. So she was the oldest, and now she's smack in the middle. And that's the grandma that I would have known. And the other thing that happened, my mom didn't even know this wedding was going to happen until a day or two before. And so she was, they moved in, and she basically just had to kind of make do. And her new mom did things different. Her new mom had different ideas about how to cook things and make things and do things. And one of the things that stand out to me about my mom, I really think the impact of all of that turmoil, it's at that critical space in her life, mid, early teens, really left her emotionally fragile. She could outwork most guys, but inside she was pretty shaky. And she spent a lot of time trying to hold the pieces together as we were growing up. My parents, I should just tell you one story about my grandma Miller. She was kind of a spunky old lady, kind of hunched over. And I remember one time, Darlene and I were dating, and we stopped by to see them. And then she packed us a lunch for the trip. I don't know if we were heading home or where we were going, but later as we were driving down the road, we opened this lunch box, and there was a bag of birdseed and a little note. It says, for the lovebirds. So she liked to have fun. My parents met at Peckway Beachy Church, and my dad had left the Old Order community, and they met there and they started dating, probably 18, 19 years old. This was early 60s by now. My dad was drafted in the Vietnam War. And so he filed as a CO, conscientious objector, and he had to find a place to do some service. So he called Faith Mission in Virginia and Northern Light Gospel Mission up in Canada. And the one in Canada called him back first. And he had in mind that he wanted to be a career missionary, to give his life in service for the Lord. And this kind of got him launched into it, because he had to do his service. Spent a year there, came back, got married, 65, I think it was. They spent a one-week honeymoon, and then they moved to northern Ontario, out into an Indian community, only had access by airplane, no airstrip, and no telephones, no nothing. They just had communication by radio to the outside world. And my dad kind of had in mind he was going to do this for life. And so he settled in for the long haul. He started learning some of the language. And I think he adapted really well to the community and to the people, and the people loved him. They still do. And all across the north, they know him, because he would come into their communities a lot. My dad, I'm going to switch now to talk a little bit about my parents. And this is where it gets personal. My dad tended to be a very serious guy. He had a clear call for missions, and he was driven by shame as a result of the abuse. I remember the early years, my dad trying to prove stuff. I didn't know he was doing it then, but looking back, he became a ministry-aholic. And just like any addiction, nothing gets in the way of ministry, between my dad and his ministry. He missed family weddings and events because he wouldn't take the time to go. He was up north and he wouldn't come back here for his own brother's wedding. I remember as a kid, one of my mom's sisters was getting married, and so she flew back with, I don't know, there probably would have been four of us. One of my single aunts came up and flew back with her, or drove back, I'm not sure how that all went, but, and my dad stayed up there to do his ministry. And I remember being gone a couple of weeks, and I actually, it's probably one of my earliest memories, but when we got back there, my mom and us kids, my dad met us, I actually ran away from him because I wasn't sure who he was. 4 or 5 years old. Didn't want him to come. Some of those early years, my mom was a pretty spunky, determined woman, pretty sociable. She liked to have fun, nice things, and she liked to have her kids in line. And the Lord blessed her with 3 boys and 2 girls. Wasn't always the easiest thing. And she spent a lot of time trying to hold life together, hold herself together on the outside for herself and her children. It didn't always work well. And I remember different times just the feeling of desperation in our home as she was trying to keep stuff together and keep us looking good. A couple things that happened that shifted the destiny of our family. I was probably about 9 or 10, and my dad had a fellow missionary who he had known well, knew the language, the Indian language, was powerfully effective as a missionary. And his family was falling apart. His kids were in the streets of Red Lake drunk. And this fellow missionary of my dad had to leave the mission field because his family was falling apart and actually had to go back where he came from. And my dad was hearing people make comments, well, you know, we saw that coming. We could have told him this was going to happen. And so my dad, he started saying, hey, don't wait till my kids are lost, until they're wrecked. Like, if you have something to tell me now, while my kids are young, well, I can do something about it. Don't wait till they're, my family's falling apart before you talk to me. And so he started saying this to a few people. And there was a few people that took him up on it. And I think it changed the course of our family. The few people that tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, Amos, this is what I see. And it was really hard for my dad to take, but it was the beginning of a shift for our family, and my dad began to do some personal work about some of the things, about some of his abuse, some of the ways he lived and related. That's some of the background to some things that shaped my life. I'm just going to put another picture up here. On the left, top left, is me and my siblings. I'm in the middle. Sister on the right is the oldest. And then the brother, and then me. And then the younger brother on the left. And then the youngest sister on the left. We're all 2 years apart, except for my youngest sister was 5 years behind. I want to just talk about some good moments that I had as a kid. And actually, I should just picture on the right. That's probably 3-4 years ago. That's our whole family there now. Nieces and nephews and in-laws. And then on the bottom, that's my wife and I and our children. A couple good moments that come to my mind. I remember being at my sister Marcy's baptism at Cedar Hill in E-Town. And I remember the impact that it had on my life. And it actually influenced me to later decide to make a commitment to the Lord. Another good moment was, even though my dad was busy, he involved us. And he was a pilot. Actually, my older brother is a pilot, and he's also an airplane mechanic. But my dad involved us, so he took us flying. I remember different times, like he'd show us how to fly this thing, and we'd be in the air, just my dad and I. And the maps, basically, all you see is, when in the air, all you see is lakes and trees, so the maps, you just follow a line and follow the shapes of lakes until you get to where you want to be. And I remember my dad showing me how to run this thing and keep it level and keep it at a certain altitude, and he'd hand me the map and go to sleep. And wake up about the time we're going to get there and land the thing. So we had a lot of fun. I remember doing stuff like that with my dad. It's a good memory. We also, where we lived was right beside a mechanic shop. And my brothers and I would spend hours and hours over there tinkering and fiddling and messing with things, learning how things worked. And I think it influenced my decision later to be a mechanic. And I was a mechanic for about 10 years. And also a good moment, my dad was very focused in his ministry, and we actually lived on the 70 acres of the Bible camp. And so one thing that I've realized looking back is that my dad, it seemed like he was always on. You know how you are when you're at work and you're focused, and then you get home and you can kind of sit back and relax. Looking back, my dad was always on, always. One time where he wasn't on was when we went hunting. And he was the craziest maniac of a hunter you've ever seen in your life. And he would kick back, and we would do crazy stuff out hunting. Best times in our lives with my dad. Remember, we had borrowed someone's pickup truck and had a snowmobile in the back, and we were going back this trail and came up to this place where there was some water that had washed over the road, and then it had frozen, and then some big machine had went through and broken the ice, and so there was chunks and water, and there's a current across there, and we're like, man, we've got to turn around here. My dad, he just backs up a little ways, drops it and drive, and boom, bam, crash, boom, through this. We made it. But he was just a maniac. We had a lot of fun with him. We had some noble moments. I had some noble moments. I learned a lot about people and caring for people by watching my dad. I observed his tenderness with people. Alcoholics off the street. Invite them into our home for food. And I think it's probably because of my dad that I was a pretty sensitive guy. I remember as a kid feeling sorry for the kid in the schoolyard. There's a fat kid that no one liked. And I remember being kind to him. think another noble thing from my history was my dad. I don't know exactly where he picked this up, but somewhere along the way he realized that he needed to talk to us, his children, about sexuality as we were growing up. So him and a few other dads would spend, I remember doing it when I was 9 and 11 and 13, where a number of dads would spend a weekend with their kids focusing on preparing for adolescence, and we'd go through the James Dobson tapes and preparing us for physical changes, for life changes as we were growing up. And I learned about the bees and the birds from those times with my dad. And we'd meet as a group sometimes, listen to the tapes, and then the dads would take us off one at a time, talk about what we heard. And it was such a blessing to me as a man. Even though my mom and dad were imperfect, like all of us, I observed them doing ministry, and they believed in a real God, and they believed in a God that could change people's lives. And that left an impression on my life. One picture I have of my mom is her kneeling, like walking into her bedroom looking for her, and her finding her on her knees by her bed praying, or walking into the living room and seeing her at the couch. And she spends a lot of time praying for her children and her family. And I think as a result of watching my parents and my family, their faith. I remember as a teenager spending a weekly time where I would fast and pray on my lunch break at work. Some good things that happened. There's also some missed moments that I had in my life. I wasted my time and my strength in a pursuit of porn that started, I think, innocently. But I used it as a salve for my loneliness and pain. But it turned into something, and it took on a life of its own. And it started in my teen years, dabbling. I went into marriage and destroyed trust with my wife and brought walls between other people. And those are some missed moments that I think about. Some more missed moments was I was pretty set on being perfect. And so I spent a lot of time trying to be that. And I missed out on a lot of enjoying life just because I was trying so hard to be perfect on the outside. I played a lot of hockey, and you'd never see me throw my gloves. But I knew where to put my stick and my weight at an opportune time. I knew how to play dirty. And that's more, I like to portray something, and to portray something good, but it wasn't always good going on inside. Some hurtful moments. I remember, not sure how old, I was probably about 16. I started working at a garage in the local town, and it was fixing cars, pumping gas. Up there we had a lot of full serve. And I remember I was probably 17, and the garage that I worked at was known for his for the front end alignments that they did. And Phil's dad would drive 70 miles to come and get an alignment done at our shop. People would drive from miles around. And one day my dad said he'd like his car worked on and wants an alignment done. And so I was just learning, and the guys in the shop, as they were teaching me, we had a, one of the reasons that, that our shop was known for alignments, we had an old manual machine, and it was very accurate. And so people would come and get their stuff done at our shop. So my dad won alignment on his car. And I remember he made an appointment, and I was going to take the car to work one day. And just before I walked out the door, my dad came up to me and said, Vernon, could you get someone else to work on the car? If you're going to work on it, I think I'll take it somewhere else. And it just, my dad was very particular about his vehicles. I don't think he meant it to destroy me. But his words and his expectation of me made a deep impression. Hurtful moment. I think because my parents were so focused in trying to present something, it seemed like they rarely trusted that I wanted to please them. And often felt like my motives were constantly in question in relationship with them. That hurt. Another hurtful moment for me was a number of times where I was physically beat up, people standing around, and there was no one to defend or protect me. That hurt. Another hurtful, something that hurt a lot for me. I had an older sister and brother, and I watched, or I observed, my mom in some of her fragile moments, her emotional and verbal and sometimes physical abuse of my older brother. He was a bit of a rebel, and I decided, kind of in response, that I had to be really good so that I wouldn't get the same treatment. And that left me wounded, seeing some of that stuff. Some defining moments in my life, things that I look back on that made a huge impact. There was an old man that used to come, him and his wife would come up every summer. And he was a mechanic, and he would spend a lot of his hours over in the shop right beside our house. And his name was Jake Lehman. And I remember after school or in the summer, we'd wake up in the morning, do our chores, and we'd head over to spend time with Jake. And Jake was a man that I remember always laughing, always laughing. He loved boys. He loved us. And I remember Jake, he painted cars, and sometimes we'd go over there, and he'd get us all set up to help him, and we'd be sanding cars and show us how to do it, get the sandpaper together, and show us the area he wanted sanded. I remember sanding, getting it about where I thought it was should be, and Jake would be off working somewhere, and I'd holler across the shop. I'd say, "Hey, Jake, come look at this. Is this good enough?" And Jake, he'd just keep on working, and he'd holler back, and he'd say, "Is it good enough for you, Vernon?" And I'd look at it. "Oh, there's a spot. Fix that a little bit." yeah, that's good enough for me. And then Jake would say, what's good enough for me then? Defining moment. Impacted decisions I made. I think it affected my decision to become a mechanic. And I worked for 10 years as a mechanic because one man thought that I could do it. Another defining moment for me was when my dad was gone a lot. I ended up early on, I don't know when it would have started, but I ended up kind of taking on the role of taking care of my mom. I would spend a lot of time trying to keep my younger brother and sister from scrapping and work to keep the peace. And I learned to not complain or make a fuss. And my mom, after a while, she'd always ask me first to do stuff because she knew I wouldn't complain. That was defining for me. And I learned to do things even and not make a fuss about anything, even if it was unfair. Another defining moment for me was 93. I attended a men's seminar. And that's the first time that I began to think about some of the conclusions that I felt my parents had left me with. The first time I began to think about that they might not all be true. And I experienced a lot of healing at the seminar. And I also began to think about myself as a man having eternal impact in the lives of people. And I also began to look at some of my sinfulness. Gonna have to speed up here a little bit. Time's almost up. Another defining moment for me was as a young adult, someone telling me that they thought I was angry. And I was like, whatever, I'm not angry. But as I was thinking about this, I was out in the woods one day, and I started thinking about someone that I was angry at. And I picked up a stick, and I started beating these sticks on trees and hollering. I was off by myself. No one could hear me. And the defining moment was for me was at the end, looking at this pile of sticks on the ground, realizing that if that person that I was angry at had been out there, I would have had it in me to kill him. And looking at the pile of sticks said something to me about how angry I was. I'm telling my story. Hopefully you can begin to connect with some of your stories. The things that I told you about affected the lens that I look at the world through. It shaped me. When I left home, I had in mind I was going to have this perfect, I was going to be this perfect little husband who would get a perfect little wife and have perfect little kids, and we'd live happily ever after. And then people could stand back and say, wow, what a good guy. I felt a lot of shame whenever I would mess up. I didn't give myself a lot of room to fail and grow from it. It was hard for me to accept my human side. And when a man grows up thinking like this, it affects choices he makes. And it affected choices that I made as a man. And I'm not saying this stuff to kind of cast blame or dump something on my parents. I haven't lived at home for 17 years. And what I do with the package I'm given is my problem. And I can't hand it to my dad or my grandpa as a man. So, you know, because of what you did is who I am. And I, as I've, over the years, started to understand my story more, my life makes a little more sense. And I think a man needs to understand his story so he can become the man he ought to be. Let's take a few observations about looking back, and we'll fill in the blanks here. My story is not unique. It's unique to me, but every one of us has a story. And it's our stories that connect us. And I hope as you guys go into your group, you can begin to tell some of your story. Every one of us has a story. And there's real story stuff going on inside of you. Did you know that? Some of it's noble, some of it's hurtful, some of it's good, some of it's defining. When a boy fails to connect with his dad, demons of one kind or another often fill the void. And I would say that happened for me. It left a hole, and I filled it with something. A boy isn't going to do nothing with it. He's going to do something. Many men have yet to reckon with their past or close out the unfinished business that still lives there. A lot of us guys have a hard time looking back and lifting the man cover and seeing what's inside. And there's some men that are 40 and 50 and 60 years old still trying to prove something. Unfinished business can drive a man to prove something, or it can drive a man to blame. To blame his parents or be a victim. And what we want to do here today is authentic manhood is takes ownership and responsibility for where you are now. Until a man unpacks his past and deals with the themes and the pain that reside there, he can never be an authentic man. Proverbs talks about, actually that's about iron sharpening iron, that's the next one. I'm just going to skip through here. You cannot become a real man without help. There's no such thing as a self-made man. We as men need another man's insight, our accountability and balance. Jake was able to fill a place in my life in areas where my dad wasn't very balanced. And it made a huge impact. A healthy man has other men in his life who help make him who he needs to be. For better or worse, we're all significantly shaped by the kind of family life we experienced. We're products of our past, but we're not prisoners to it, unless we choose to be. We can choose to be products by ignoring or denying or surrendering. And I think sometimes we unpack things to keep what's good. We tell our stories to understand and explain and invite help for areas that we need help in. The next 3 weeks we'll be looking back. And 2 weeks from now, Sam Gingrich is going to come and talk about, spend a couple weeks talking about dads. And as you guys go to your group today, there's questions in that last section. Be real about them.